Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Health Data Technology and Interoperability, Patient Engagement, Information Sharing, and Public Health Interoperability, or HTI2 for short, proposed rule task force meeting. Today's task force subgroup meeting is the Public Health Subgroup. I'm Peter Karas with ONC, and I would like to thank you for joining us today. I will be serving as the designated federal officer for today's call on behalf of Seth Pazinski. And a reminder that all workgroup meetings are open to the public, and public feedback is welcomed and encouraged. There are two avenues for public comments. Members of the public can type comments in the Zoom chat feature throughout the meeting, or make verbal comments during the public comment period that is scheduled towards the end of today's agenda. I will now begin with a roll call of the workgroup members. When I call your name, please do indicate that you are present, and we will start first with our co-chair, Bryant Thomas Karras.
Present.
Shyla Blend.
Good morning.
Good morning. Hans Botzendijk.
Good morning.
Good morning. Steve Eichner.
Good morning.
Good morning. Lee Fleischer. Raj Godvarti.
Present.
And Jillian Haney has noted that she will be absent for today's meeting. Stephen Hester. Joel Hartzell.
Good morning.
Good morning. Aaron Holtz-Coyne.
Good morning.
Good morning. Jim Gerges.
Good morning.
Good morning. Mary Beth Carrillo.
Good morning.
Good morning. Kike Lamo Oshun-Kanton.
Good morning.
Good morning. Zeynep Sumar King. Naresh Sundar Rajan.
Morning.
Morning. Thomas Wilkinson.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, everyone. Are there any task force members who I missed or anyone who just joined that would like to indicate their presence? All right, well, great. I will turn it over to our co-chair, Brian Thomas Karras, for his opening remarks.
So thank you. Thank you, everybody, for volunteering or voluntolding to participate. I really, really appreciate, especially during the summer months, people signing up for weeks and weeks of hard work. But my hope is that we keep this fun, and it'll be something that you all look forward to each week. As I said, I think many of you were able to join on Friday, but it bears repeating that, you know, we're building on the shoulders of what came before us, and we wouldn't have these public health mentionings in HTI2 had not there been tremendous work in our field of public health informatics, pushing forward standards and recommendations for advancing the way we connect with our clinical partners and our federal partners. So I'll thank Janet Hamilton and Carolyn Peterson, who chaired the 2021 task force, and Jillian Haney and Arian Malik, who chaired the 2022 task force. Those I think set us up really well for not all, but many of the items that were mentioned in those recommendations and transmittals were heard loud and clear. And the ONC staff have assembled those into the notice of proposed rulemaking recommendations, or notice of proposed rulemaking on which we will be making recommendations. So, the only other thing that we'll talk about this when we go through the procedural stuff, but I do hope that everybody can, I know everyone has day jobs, but I hope you can prioritize this work, come prepared to the meetings, do the homework, which means, you know, reading the 1,067 pages, or at least the ones that are pertaining to public health or the sections that we're going to be commenting on, and also perhaps reread the recommendations from the task forces in 21 and 22, so that we can see the origin story of where these things came from, perhaps read in some of the intent. I will pause there and turn it around to you all. Any questions for me as your chair? Okay, hearing none, Peter, why don't let's advance.
Brian, is this something that you you want to walk through on a charge?
Or, sure. Or,
okay.
Yeah.
Go for
and
it.
Feel free to interrupt or correct me. If those of you who attended on Friday know that the way the high tech works and the way task forces work in particular are that a particular charge is handed down, and it does provide swim lanes or scope restrictions on what we as a task force are commenting on. So for our task in particular, the overall task for all the work groups are around HTI2, the proposed rule, and going through and trying to, during the public comment period, because we are elevated but part of the public nonetheless, put forward recommendations, edits that we think that should be taken into the rule before it's finalized. And the 60-day comment period has actually, I haven't checked if it hit the Federal Register yet.
It has not yet. We will certainly keep this group updated on when it does, but it is not up as of today.
It could, so it's not going to happen today. All right. So no surprises during the middle of the meeting, but we're actually on a slightly accelerated time clock as a group. We won't be leveraging the full 60 days. We'll likely want to complete our transmittal for vote of the full HITECH during the September full HITECH meeting. There will still, those of you who also will want to submit your own public comment may do so all the way up to the 60-day time period end. All right, next slide. Now let's get into the detail. Oh, okay. Our agenda for today. And the next slide, switch over to you, Molly, or did we go into the public health specific task? Go next slide. There it is. So I'll cover this a little bit, and then Molly, Rachel and team, feel free to jump in. But what this is, the within the task for our task force, these are the ones specific to the public health criteria. And it kind of marches it out in, this is probably not by accident, in a series where each of the weeks of our assembling of the task force have a different focus. And rolling through the what used to just be the F criteria are now the F and G criteria. We've got our work cut out for us. In previous task forces, we had enough time to, you know, just roll through the, you know, 7F criteria that already existed. We're going to have to work faster and mash things up a bit in order to make it to the finish line. We have a couple of, or I think one session where we can do some housekeeping and cleaning towards the end, but it's going to be fast. I'll turn it over to Rachel, Molly. Comments on our tasks.
Great. Thanks, Brian. So I think we're going to just go ahead and move forward and let Molly provide a high-level overview of the public health data exchange part of HCI2. I think it will kind of set the stage, so I encourage you all to pay particular attention, and then we will begin some brief discussion afterwards. So Molly, take it away.
Absolutely. Thanks, everyone. Brian already stole all my talking points that were to kick us off by saying that we we really appreciate the work that has come before us, the recommendations that came from the Public Health Data Task Force in 2021 and 22 were instrumental and hugely helpful. And so I know quite a few folks on this particular committee were part of those recommendations or work in places where others were part of those recommendations. So our intention was to really build upon those, as I'm sure you have, you know, printed and bound this rule and keep by your bedside table to read every night. We do reference in a few places the recommendations made from those particular task force that helped inform the prioritization that we took into account for this rule. So really echo that thanks. And then secondly, echo the thanks for all of you being willing to spend your summer days with us for the last few weeks of summer. We know that this is quite the time commitment, like Bryant mentioned, and it's not just the meetings, but it's also the in-between work. So really, truly thank you for your time and your commitment on this topic that I hold particularly near and dear to my heart. So I know that is the same for everyone on the line. We can move on to the next slide. And I think right into the next one, sorry. just some logistical information, like we mentioned already, the rule is not yet published on OFR. And so as soon as it is, we will be able to say that 60-day comment period officially starts. So we have been granted a few extra days in our reading time before the comment period officially kicks off. Just a few notes. I know some of you heard this on our Friday meeting and perhaps in the webinar that we hosted last Wednesday. But due to the rulemaking process and the Administrative Procedures Act, we can only present the information that is within the proposed rule as it is written in that proposed rule. So we're not able to interpret, clarify, or provide any further guidance than what is actually written in the NPRM. And so while that may seem like some of our answers perhaps are short or frustrating, we are bound by that particular APA rule. So I know that we've got some additional ONC folks on the line who can help make sure that we're all staying within those guardrails. And we can move to the next slide. I think we've got a few overviews before we start digging into the particular criteria that Brian mentioned. Yes, Brian, go for it.
Yeah, Molly, does that restriction on federal limitations on just providing the as written guidance pertain only to HHS employees, or are other federal employees allowed to interpret?
To pontificate, I think that I saw that Beth was on the line. So Beth, not to put you on the spot, but I might, but I am going to put you on the spot if you're able.
No, any federal employee cannot pontificate on it. It is the APA applies to the entire federal government for all federal rulemaking. And HHS is one agency, so our friends at CDC will also be responding with the same sorts of comments. that we are if there's something that is traveling too far into the opining. Now, that said, task force members who are not federal employees are more than welcome to pontificate, opine, and provide that feedback as your recommendations on directions we should take.
Be careful.
Steve, I see your hand up too.
Those who know, we have time limitations on these meetings.
I know.
Well, kind of supportive comment. Can you remind us about when the public health session is for OMC or presenting on the rule?
Yes, absolutely. That I can answer clearly.
That was on July
30th
yeah.
at 2 p.m. Eastern. So I can put that in the chat too. And I know that we've got a link for that up on our website. So that will be a week from today. And it is the same day as our next committee meeting. So you'll have a day full of me in your ears. Apologies in advance. But that will be a week from today.
Tuesday is Public Health Day, apparently.
Tuesday is Public Health Day. So, Hans, in response to your question, then of course someone sent something else in there and then I lost it. So Hans has in the chat, clarifying what the intent is for LOI to not only be a create for an EHR, but also a receipt would be out of bounds. That would be within bounds because we do have a component in the rule for receipt adhering to LOI as well. So since that is part of the NPRM, we do have that kind of corresponding requirement between, and we'll get to that in a minute, sorry to jump into letters, but between the A2, F3, and F23 criteria, we do cover both the creation and transmission adhering to an LOI and the receipt adhering to that same implementation guide. Okay, just making sure that there wasn't anything else coming in through chat. All right, so to keep plugging away, the purpose of the HCI to propose rule, public health components were certainly a large chunk of that rule, but not the entire thing. So there were lots of components with the intention of continuing to implement the 21st Century Cures Act. Even beyond the API for public health, there were quite a few updates to Firebase APIs throughout the rule. And I do believe we have some folks on the line if any questions come up related to those criteria. Those fall within our G criteria, and then a new subset that we reference as J. Further achieving the goals of the Biden-Harris administration executive orders, particularly there were quite a few that we've got listed on the screen, but advancing racial equity and support for underserved community, quite a few components of the rule that are working to achieve that, and then leveraging health IT to further advance interoperability, which I know all of you are immersed in on a daily basis. And next slide. So this is going into a bit further within the components of the rule. There are also, and I might ask, oh, thank you, Sarah. I was just gonna say I lost my other screen with the links, but there are additional deep dives on HTI2 beyond public health that are scheduled for the next few weeks. One of those includes information blocking, which we'll go over those bottom bullets on this screen here. And there's another deep dive session as well that is escaping me at the moment. But those are all listed on our website and will be scheduled similarly to the public health one, where we do a deeper dive into each component. And now for what we've all been waiting for, I think we can move ahead two slides to get to those public health data exchange revisions and new criteria. So like Bryant mentioned, traditionally, many of you are likely familiar with the certification criteria that were F1 through 7. Those all cover the transmission of public health data to a public health agency. And so those covered, you know, sending systems, likely EHRs, the other certified health IT modules could also achieve those particular functions. And in this rule, we propose to update not only those existing certification criteria, but also to add some additional new ones. So we did, and we'll get to those on a new slide, but not only did we update the current ones, we also added new ones for those sending systems. And then in concert, we also added added receipt-based criteria. And so what we were attempting to do there was have corresponding criteria that married with those F1 now through 9 to ensure that we had the function on both ends of the spectrum, to send and to receive. In addition, we also proposed a new standards-based API that would help advance public health data exchange. We did build that particular API off of the current API that's been in the certification program for some time, post-21st Century Cures. For the wonky folks on the phone, the G10 criteria, we took that and created G20. And again, I do have some folks on the call who can help support any detailed questions on that particular one. And so really to pull from a lot of the public health task force recommendations from the last few years, our goals there were to be able to advance tools, systems, and standards in tandem. So instead of having, you know, the senders being held to specific requirements or their systems being able to do certain functions, we wanted to be sure that those were corresponding across that whole workflow. And many of you have likely heard Mickey give the analogy about pitching and catching and making sure that we were certifying both the pitchers and the catchers. That's about where my baseball analogy can go. And then, so I can't take that one any further. But that was the intent of creating the new set of F criteria that we'll see are in the 20s. And we can go to the next slide, since I think I've already started to give away the details there as we're talking through the F criteria. So, Brian?
So I wanted to, before we transition to going into the laundry list, I want to challenge challenge our committee here to think about breaking down or Mickey's analogy of the catchers and pitchers, because I think that we may need to get to be successful in the intent of what we're trying to do. We may need to, it's not just certifying the catchers and the pitchers, it's making sure that we've got enough detail in certification of the actual pitch of the ball that's being thrown, so that wild, you know, no matter how well you certify a catcher, if the pitcher throws a wild pitch, they can't catch it. And I think part of what we're dealing with in this country is that there's difference in tolerance of wild pitches from one jurisdiction to another, or there's appropriately requests from certain jurisdictions that, hey, we only want fastballs or we only want curveballs. And that's led to problems, but we'll need to be careful that we don't over-regulate to a point where those states aren't able to do what is in state regulation, but document what kind of pitches are we allowing for. So,
you took that analogy much better than I could have, so kudos.
Yeah, and I think I won an award for being the oldest, lankiest, and least coordinated player on my little league team.
So. Well, my pitch wouldn't make it off the mound, so that's why we're referencing standards in a terrible way of furthering that analogy, to make sure that we're all throwing the same ball. I'll stop with that now. But so as we can see on the screen, these are the sending side of our criteria. Like I mentioned earlier, the F1 through F7, those should look familiar to folks who have been immersed in the certification program in the past. Those existing criteria have all been updated with the most recent version of the standard that has been referenced in the past. And so that is on our agenda for next week. We will dig into F1 through F7 in good detail, take a look at those standards and the IGs that are currently being referenced, and go through the committee's recommendations based on those particular ones. I will flag in advance for folks, not to add to homework, but to think about some of the F1 through F7, we did also do some functional updates in addition to standards updates. So I would ask that folks take a particular look at F1. So F1 is transmission to immunization registries, which in the prior program, we proposed that the name update will be immunization registries bidirectional exchange. That F1 criteria did have some additional functional requirements in addition to an updated standard. And so those additional functional requirements that we proposed include receiving incoming patient level immunization specific queries or requesting from external systems. So just to flag that it within these that there are some functional updates just to give a little bit of a deeper dive within those particular criteria. F2 is a standards update only. F3 gets a bit more complicated, so I imagine that we'll spend some good amount of time next week digging into F3 and the corresponding A2 criteria. So F3 is transmission to public health laboratories or reportable laboratories, reportable laboratory results. And so that was F3. Now we are updating with some additional functions. And in addition to the transmission of reportable laboratory results, we are also, like Hans alluded to in the chat, including receive and validate for laboratory orders within F3. So that is a new functional criteria there. That receive and validate for laboratory orders is pointing to the LOI implementation guide. In addition to F3, we do update to the newer standards of ELR for the transmission of reportable laboratory results and values. We propose a shift to LRI implementation guide from ELR with a 2028 proposed date for that. And so again, I imagine that we'll spend a fair amount of time digging into those particular functions since those are new functions in addition to new standards within F3. Also, I know that on one of our earlier slides, we put A2 on there. Now, A2, I know, is a new letter, not part of traditional public health criteria, but A2 is one of our computerized physician order entry requirements, or CPOE. And in HDI 2, we propose expanding CPOE for laboratory orders to point to the laboratory orders implementation guide, so the LOIIG. Sorry, all the acronyms start blending together in my mouth here. And so that is the kind of corresponding component to A2. So to F3. So A2 is the creation and transmission of laboratory orders adhering to that LOI implementation guide. A2 also is including the receiving of laboratory results adhering to the LRI implementation guide. So A2 and F3 are components that work together. We'll also talk in a later week about F23. Laboratory reporting is more complicated than some of the other requirements. So I promise that not all of the Fs will be quite this in depth. But part of the intent was that the way that we wrote A2 is not proposed to be limited to reportable laboratory orders and results. F3 and F23 within those actual components is explicit about reportable laboratory orders and reportable laboratory results. A2 is not. And so that distinction there is just important from a public health perspective to think about. Certainly reportable orders and results are what are coming into public health agencies and public health authorities. Without the reportable indicator, it could certainly go beyond that reportable conditions list. I know that was a lot. We'll have lots of time to talk about that next week. I'm going to pause there to see what questions folks have just from those first few.
Good job, Molly. It is. I was thinking to myself, it bears a whole expansion in the laundry list here, because I agree with you. ELR, although, you know, perhaps the oldest and most, you know, bread and butter of what we do in public health, we want to keep it in alignment with what is happening on the clinical side. So I think it's a really good integration. No. Steve, you got your hand up first, and then
this may be a parking lot issue, but as we're thinking about when we get to the F-20 pieces, and as we're thinking about how we're going to do our work over the next few weeks, I'm kind of thinking about whether we want to look at combining the materials so that we're looking at the early Fs and the corresponding 20X, or whether we want to kind of walk through this set and then come back around to the 20s. But that's kind of a placeholder thought, but just keep that in mind as we're going through the rest of the information, I guess.
Yeah, that's a really interesting suggestion, Steve. I was thinking of that too, that perhaps at least for, or especially for laboratory, that it might make sense to do the A2, F3, and F23 all at once. And that's feedback that Brian and Rachel and I can definitely take offline and think about the best way to present. Han, sorry, I see your hand up too.
Yeah, I want to follow up on that a little bit and the comment in the chat. I think as part of the deeper dive, as we get into that, A2, F3, F23, who between providers, public health labs, and public health authorities are really meant to be the catcher or the pitcher for the respective guides? Because as an example, all three seem to be talking about receiving orders. And for some of those, that's very clear. And for some of it, it's the intent is not quite clear as to why that particular actor should use that. There might be good reasons, but that clarification will be helpful of the details. And that kind of a theme is across a number of the variety of F criteria. To contrast with some of the payer or provider, there is more clarity as to provider supposed to do this, payer supposed to do that, according to the naming or client and server. Still some questions there as well. But that analogy to really understand the focus of the criteria and then would be helpful to understand the intent. Comments will come later, but I have a couple there, but it would be helpful to understand the intent to make the comments a little bit easier to make.
That's great feedback. Thank you. And I have a visual percolating in my mind that I hope might help with the lab conversation that I'll work on before our next conversation as well.
Yeah, and I think we're gonna have to be very deliberate in differentiating clinical labs and national labs transmitting to public health versus the public health laboratory lab and its interaction with clinical providers. There may be, you know, potential crossover between those two. So we'll have to keep our language straight and label. In some cases, we are the pitcher in public health. So looking forward to coming up with a new analogy that makes more sense.
Yes, lots of different hats being worn. I think the others will be hopefully slightly less complicated than laboratory reporting. I know that I have already exceeded my allotted time, so we'll do my best to continue through the next two slides. As we're continuing to think about the new, about the existing F criteria that did have additional functions added to them, F4 or cancer registry reporting was one of those components that had additional functions added to it in addition to a standard update. So within cancer registry reporting or F4, we also proposed including support for the cancer pathology reporting adhering to the HL7 fire implementation guide. So that's another functional update to think about as we're thinking about comments for those first few F criteria. The next few, I promise, are a much lower lift. So case reporting, AUAR, and healthcare surveys, those three were standard updates. And so I think that hopefully we can have a relatively short conversation in terms of questions or recommendations related to those standards updates. I will flag that thanks to coordination with our friends at CDC, we are able to have some folks from the CDC programs on the line next week who will be able to answer any specific questions too about their programs and about the implementation guides as well, if needed. So chugging along to those last two criteria, birth reporting and prescription drug monitoring program, those two criteria are net new criteria. And they are also birth reporting is also pointing to a FHIR implementation guide for vital records for birth reporting. The prescription drug monitoring program criteria is a functional requirement and it does not point to a specific standard. So if you are looking through the rule, the PDMP or F9 component is a bit longer than some of the other updates because it is a functional requirement. And so there is lots of descriptive language about what those requirements and functions are within that without having to point to an implementation guide. Next slide. And so these are all of the corresponding requirements from that first set of the page. It is not a one-to-one set since this is kind of the first time that we are proposing the receipt criteria. In working with CDC, these were the priority ones that we proposed for this first foray into this world. So we'll see here, we have immunizations, syndromic surveillance, electronic lab reporting, cancer pathology reporting, electronic case reporting, birth reporting, and PDMP. And so all of those components are pointing to the same implementation guide that was discussed and referenced in the corresponding F1 through 9 measure or criteria. And all of these are looking for receipt, validation, parsing, and filtering. Those regulatory definitions, we can go into greater detail when we dive into each of these criteria in future programmatic meeting or into future committee meetings, and that will kind of give more detailed definitions of what it is when we say receipt, what it is when we say validate, parse, filter, et cetera. Given time, let's pause here and see what questions or clarification folks need on any of this before we move into more comment and discussion. Hans?
Thank you. Yeah, not a general question that can be clarified in the details. Some of the dates and the date alignments, because we're introducing both sides, one of the questions is going to come up. When can I expect the other side, whomever that is ready or supposed to be ready? When can I expect that? That will be helpful to understand in our discussions as well, what concerns, considerations, or opportunities we have.
Yes, really excellent question. So I know that for many of our expiration dates, we have either a January 1st, 2027 or a January 1st, 2028 expiration date for those particular standards. Beth, I'm going to put you on the spot again and ask, I think you can do a better job than I in terms of discussing the net new requirements and the kind of the role in which we play or don't play in terms of those enforcement or compliance dates. And you may be double muted because I do see for the F20s.
And I am double muted. I wanted to make sure I was covering the right net new because some of the Fs have net new as well. So we'll start with the F20s. Some of the Fs also have a similar model to them. All of these pieces are for the technology itself. So that's a really, really important piece to keep in mind. When we talk about pitchers and catchers, we're talking about systems. So they are robot pitchers and catchers, not the entities controlling them behind the scenes with a remote control. So the requirements from a technical perspective will be available for certification essentially as soon as we finalize the rule. So once there's a final rule on the effective date of the final rule, we would have certification available for any of the 2022, 23s, et cetera, that are finalized to be able to test and certify to those criteria. But remember, the program itself is optional. So that is for developers who choose to participate and choose to have their technology certified. So in that way, it isn't actually a deadline timing requirement. It's an availability option, but the requirements would be in the program effective from that date. So for those things that may be updates or modifications of the early F suite and things within this one, for example, like case reporting that have similar constructs, there is a timeline by which that update and provide must be made. And the way that that works is essentially saying technology that is currently certified must update to the new standard or the new functionality and roll it out to customers by that compliance date. So then that gives you the scoping for the technology. It's really the first end is an availability date. And for those things where there is a, there's a revision or an update, an end date. In terms of a use of such things, all of those types of pieces are not within the scope of this rule. So in other words, the requirement to use one of these functionalities or implement one of these functionalities by the entity controlling the robot is done by our federal partners. So that would be CMS programs, for instance, CMS programs for the new PDMP, the other end of it, the S9 version, that would be defined by CMS requiring providers to use it within their programs. There might be CDC grants that would reference things, or there might be, you know, HRSA might do something. So all of those requirements for the use of these criteria are outside the scope of this particular rule and would be things that entities that are other parts of HHS or states or whoever from a health system point of view, if a alternate payment model decided to implement them for their purposes, that would be the defining time for the use of them to actually be in place. And I saw some things going off in the chat. I'll try and catch really quickly to see if I need to add anything further.
Hans, do you want to?
No, I think Beth clarified it. I think what I stated in the chat is my understanding of what I think Beth indicated. It's really the other programs, and now I'm made a similar comment. So I think we're understanding.
Yep.
And if I can, I don't see Jim Gergis on camera, but I'm imagining for the catcher's mitts, there could be CDC incentives that come down analogous to the CMS incentives that that are already exist. Future alignment between federal rules and federal funding. But maybe federal folks don't need to comment on that. That's in the opining.
I will not answer for CDC. And I know that some of the CDC folks are on. But I do think that there is that it's a good question. And we do actually have some comments and questions in the rule about things like that to consider places where adopting the standard itself may be beneficial because there is the requirement under the HITECH Act, under 13111 and 13112 of the HITECH Act, that federally funded initiatives should align to consistent adopted standards wherever feasible. So we do ask questions about that in the rule itself. And so welcome if there are specific comments about, you know, the applicability or usefulness of the standards, in addition to the criteria, we specifically do ask those questions within the rule.
Right. This is Steve. There also needs, of course, to be recognition of state laws and regulations and where there may be a difference of perspective between federal and state positions.
Yeah. Well, that often is the case with when criteria and rules have come down in the past, there's always that tagline, local and state law applicable local and state laws still apply.
Mm-hmm.
So I imagine that will be peppered throughout our comments. We're probably behind schedule, so I'm going to hold. I had a comment in the weeds on the birth reporting new criteria, but I'll wait till we get to that in our weekly series.
Perfect. Sorry. I went so fast in the overview webinar last week that I told myself I could slow down today, and I slowed it down too much. So I'm sorry. But I think we're good on this slide. We can move to the next one, which is my last, and then we can move into the rest of the content and going through the spreadsheet. So I do have folks who are a lot smarter than me on this topic on the line who can help with any questions on this one. But the kind of third tier of our stool, you know, just to put a new analogy in there, is the standardized API for public health data exchange. And this is what we have been referring to as G20. And it is in the rule as G20 if you're looking for a control find shortcut. So this G20 criteria is an HL7 FHIR-based API meant for public health data exchange. And it really is building and expanding on the capabilities that were included in the patient and population services API in G20. And so this criteria is meant to be able to support the development of additional public health FHIR implementation guides in the future and really be looking at developing a set of core modular extensible capabilities and standards that will long-term ideally be able to be used in a variety of different particular public health reporting use cases. Just given time, I'll cut myself off there and just ask Jeff if you have anything to add to that. I think we've got some details in terms of the benefits on the slide here. And again, I think we'll have a meeting where we'll be able to really do a deep dive into this particular criteria. Brian?
Jeff, go first.
No, nothing to add. Go ahead and ask your question.
So I asked this in our prep meeting with the other co-chairs, but I'm envisioning that this could be, here I'm talking with my hands to a camera that's not on. This could be one of those situations where the subcommittee focusing on certification and standards, who I imagine will be spending a lot of time in the G10 space, could make changes that we need to be aware of on the public health side so that our G20 stays aligned. So I'm hoping that there's significant cross checks between the task force subcommittees to make sure that we don't get to that final week and go, oh my gosh, the recommendation that they're making totally negates what we're trying to do on the public health side.
Yeah, I think that's an important thing to keep in mind as you develop your recommendations, and certainly we'll be sure to, you know, we can facilitate to make sure that your comments are parallel or aligned. I think otherwise we're very cognizant of the interdependencies and cross-references that exist between G10 and, you know, kind of G20, as well as, and we'll get into it in a different work group, the new J criteria for modular API capabilities. And this is all very, you know, very deliberate, although it does make for a little bit more, it does make for a little bit tougher read. But, you know, I think, you know, a lot of the proposal in G20 is very much aligned with G10. And so the intent here is to really build off of and extend the capabilities of G10, but to have something in G20 that would be more fit for purpose for public health. Hence, we do reference the US Public Health Profiles Library, IG, and we ask for comment on that. And then I would just underscore just one other thing that we put there in the benefits and we opine about in the preamble regarding the intention to really support current and future development of public health implementation guides. So really what we have proposed at G20 is a set of functionalities and capabilities, again, aligned with G10, that would support future development of implementation guides for public health use cases.
Right. So in the spirit of keeping alignment, could I see a quick show of hands from people on this task force who are also participating in the standards and perfect. Steve, Hans, anyone else? All right, I'm deputizing, Naresh.
And Naresh too.
I'm deputizing you three to keep your public health hat on while you're in that committee and make sure and warn us if there are things that are going sideways.
And that's a really excellent flag. And I think from Jeff and I's perspective too, that can be something that we also keep in the back of our minds as well. And Peter can ask you and your team for help on that as well, if there's specific meetings that we should be attending, just as flies on the wall. All right, I took a significantly more time than allotted, so apologies. I think that cut a little bit of our spreadsheet time to go through the Google Sheet that we'll be using for the group to come up with their recommendations. But please, as you have questions or thoughts between now and then, definitely feel free to reach out to myself or Rachel or Brian.
All right. So, Now for the detailed work, how we actually are going to get our work done, and
I do have that spreadsheet up, Brian. If you want me to share my screen, just so folks can see it if they're not already in it,
that would be great, Molly. If you want to share that, I covered not everybody on the call today was on the Friday kickoff meeting. So I'll at the risk of repeating, I'll share a kind of just a process that I found really useful in the previous task force work, which was to make sure that there's good courtesy in how the spreadsheet is used. It's a Google Docs or a Google Sheet. Be careful how you say that. So I believe if you haven't already, the ASEL or ONC folks will be asking people for your Google ID to invite you to participate in the spreadsheet. For those of you who work in government agencies, that can sometimes be tricky. I ended up having to use a personal device rather than a agency issued device to get it to work properly. I trust that people will be able to figure it out. One thing that if you could scroll a little bit over. One thing that in the recommendations and justification and comments, it's super important that people, because of limitations of the technology, it's super important that people attribute comments with as indicated here, putting your initials or putting your name and then spelling out your comments so that there's ability for people's comments to all be heard, as opposed to if you don't agree with something, deleting it, because then it just disappears and there is no record of that comment ever existing. So use it wisely and be kind and considerate of colleagues' opinions.
So. Can I make a suggestion, Brian and Molly? Is that I have it open right now, And the rows that are in here, and a couple of them have cover multiple criteria. For example, row 3 covers F1 through 7, A2, and then other ones are 8, 9, 21 through 20, 21 through 29. It actually would be very helpful if those can be split, because there are going to be comments that are specifically to F23, not F23 plus 3 plus A2. So a little bit more breakdown, because otherwise the comments are going to be very difficult to follow in the subsequent columns.
Totally agree.
Yeah, and Hans, we're totally going to do that. We're going to break it out more. We just haven't had the chance yet, but before next week's, where we're beginning to talk about the specific F criteria, we'll break it out. Yep.
Okay, can I ask a favor in that regard? I'm going to be on PTO next week, so I don't think the chances that I can attend are high. If I'm already starting to put in comments now, quote unquote, later today, tomorrow, and you haven't done it yet, is it okay if I put my name and the specific criterion in the column? So that you can help shuffle it into the right spot, or
absolutely,
I create a new row.
Yeah, we'll move it. We'll move
That's
it.
That's perfect.
But yeah, just make sure you attribute it as where you want it, and then we'll make sure to move it into that spot. Not a problem.
Okay, thank you.
And don't encourage attending while you are on PTO. So whatever you can do before then, we'll separate out.
I may or may not be planning to call into one of our sessions from a campground on Orcas Island, just so you're aware.
I don't support that behavior.
Okay. I'm just trying to coerce me in participating as well.
No. Do as I say, not as I do.
Okay.
You're not the chair, Hans. I just felt a little bit extra responsibility. But I super appreciate your comments. And I think that especially the mashup between, and for those of you who, actually, we didn't do any a round of introductions. And now I'm regretting our, we'll see if we can get to the end, if we still have time. Maybe we could use any remaining time after the public comment to let people introduce themselves and get to know each other. But, you know, Hans, really appreciate Oracle's perspective on the pitcher perspective for these criteria.
Yeah, and to for full disclosure, I will be blending in the EHRA membership perspective in there.
Perfect. And that's a great reminder. If people can try to wear the best hat possible. So if you're, rather than representing what's beneficial to just your organization or you as an individual, try to empathize with the larger organizational structure that you're here trying to represent. Other states, you know, be a voice for neighboring states and be a voice for neighboring technologies, so that we come up with recommendations that help elevate everyone. All right. What's next on our agenda?
I think that we might actually be able to do some intros now before public comment. Public comment, I believe,
just about
is
to say
yeah, we're actually
scheduled at.
We're tracking a little bit early. Public comment is scheduled for 12:20. So, in a couple directions, I guess we can pause to see if folks have any other questions on the recommendations tracker, process questions, how that is going to move forward throughout the task force meetings over the next couple weeks. Also just wanted to echo what Brian said, you know, flag for the ONC team. If you are a member and do not have access, you should have received access to the tracker. But if you do have any issues with access, just let us know. So we can pause there to see if there are any questions on the process for how we're going to go through consensus building as one family here for the next couple weeks. And if not, we can Peter, use some of the time to do some introductions. But Rachel,
Peter, can you? Yeah, Peter, can you address how like the public could have access to this Google Sheets, or how does that happen?
Yeah, so this is a working document. This is specifically for HITACH members. It will be shared publicly during public meetings. However, the public will not have access to the Google Doc. The public will obviously have access to our agenda and our slides. They'll be able to participate publicly through the course of the task force meetings. But this is a working document for members. It will be displayed, as I mentioned, during task force meetings as we're rolling up our sleeves and doing the work, but it is not something that is shared publicly or accessed by the public.
And from past task forces, as we approach the finish line, there'll be transformation of the language that's in the tracking spreadsheet into a draft document that kind of once we reach a stage of consensus after discussion on any given topic, that consensus recommendation will make its way into a separate document. If passed, is a good indication of how this one will proceed.
Yes, it'll follow a similar process. The group meetings are pieces of the pie that all come together as one pie towards the end. And the last week of task force meetings, so it'll be that first week in September, we'll have the full task force come together. But it'll be one recommendation set as proposed by HITACH task force members.
And members, even members of the subcommittee group one will be able to comment anywhere in the document, is my understanding, before it becomes final and transmitted. So we'll have it'll be a great opportunity, reserve some time in that final week to to look at what's happening in our other sister sections. Looking forward to getting to that phase. All right. So Molly, you did go faster than you needed to. If we have 15 minutes here before we open up to public comment, but how should we proceed with the introductions? Just go through the list that's the roster that's displayed and let people say a little bit about themselves, what organization they're coming from or what perspective they are bringing to the task force.
That would be great.
Okay. So I'll go first and try to lead by example and use, you know, a full 7 minutes of the time. No, I'll go try to go as fast as possible. I'm Dr. Bryant Thomas Karras. I'm the Chief Medical Informatics Officer, CMIO, for Washington State Department of Health. But I am here, although approved by our state government for participation, I'm here not representing my agency, but representing, bringing my own expertise to the HITACH. I'm a physician, a biomedical engineer, informatician, and a senior medical epidemiologist, serving the state of Washington for over, 24, almost 25 years. Have a lot of perspective on the road that we've taken. So let's move down the list to Sheila.
Good morning, everybody. I am Dr. Sheila Blend. I currently serve as the health IT director at North Dakota Health Information Network. I also serve on high tech from my personal expertise, and that includes previous to my role, which I've been in for over 5 years. I had worked at our State Department of Health and in the private sector. And also during the COVID pandemic, I was assisting as deputy chief of staff for that. So bringing that expertise and working closely with our state on their DMI project into this work group. I guess I pass it off to Hans.
Okay. If I get that one to work. My name is Hans Buitendijk. I am representing and providing a perspective mostly from the EHR, HIT world. In that space, depending on the time of the day, I'll work for Oracle, who is my employer, as a senior director interoperability strategy, but most of my time is spent in the industry outside of Oracle, working with everybody that has an interest to advance interoperability. So I'm participating in HL7 in a leadership role, actually one of the editors of the LOI guides that are being discussed, co-chair of the work group that owns those guides. They also own a variety of the fire capabilities that we talk about as well. I'm involved with EHRA. That's a group of various EHR vendors that we're working together on how to advance a number of areas, including public health interoperability. I'm the chair of the public health work group, and then beyond that, and those are those three are probably the main perspectives that you'll hear me talk from. But other than that, involved in a variety of the national networks like Commonwealth, Care Quality, TEFCA, et cetera, to help make it moving forward. And I've been at it for a number of decades. I'm losing track of how many.
Great. And Hans, let me cut off the handoff to see if Naresh wants to do his introduction before he has to drop.
Oh, I was just typing in, Brian. But yeah, I can just go ahead really quick. Thanks for accommodating me. This is Naresh, and currently serving as Chief Data Officer for Sync Health. Sync Health is a statewide health information exchange for the state of Nebraska and state of Iowa. So my work spans across data democratization, interoperability, and innovative solutions for upcoming challenges and fire-based interoperability between providers, payers, and policymakers altogether. I have a background in medical informatics, and I've been in this domain for almost a few decades. Started with the Utah Department of Health, and eventually worked on multiple CDC projects, led into perspectives of bringing into opioid data interoperability with pharmacy drug monitoring programs. Really look forward to sharing insights and collaborating with the team here. Thanks.
Great. All right. Go ahead, Steve. I was going to check in. If anybody else has to drop early, raise your hand. But Steve or Ike. We don't have more than one Steve, so you can go by your real name if you want.
I flip between Steve and Ike, depending on how many Steves are in the room. I'll answer to either. I'm Steve Eichner. I'm the Health IT Lead for the Texas Department of State Health Services. I've got the pleasure of serving on high tech with my personal expertise. I've been working in health IT for 20 some odd years, or almost 20 years. I've been involved in HL7 in different work groups over about 17 of those years. Also have significant expertise in disability needs and services. I've been involved with TEFCA since its inception and aware of a bunch of different projects like Pulse and other activities. And it is my pleasure to serve on this work group.
And Brian, I think we can skip down to Joel.
Great.
Lee, yeah. Rajesh, and Jillian are not on.
Excellent. We're making great time then. Okay, Joel.
Great. Yeah, Dr. Joel Hartzell, I'm the Chief Health Informatics Officer for Electronic Case Reporting at the Association of Public Health Laboratories. I'm an epidemiologist, informatician by training, but I've been working in public health surveillance at the federal, state, local level pretty much the entirety of my career. I've been working in electronic case reporting for a very long time, involved in the early implementations back in 2014 at Utah Department of Health. And so a lot of knowledge on electronic case reporting, and that's kind of, I think, what I bring to the table here. But yeah, excited to work with you all on this effort. I will hand it off to
Joel. Before you hand it off, just a little deeper for those who aren't familiar with what APHL is.
So yeah, electronic case reporting is the kind of joint led by CDC, APHL, and CSDE. APHL is really serving as kind of the technical arm of electronic case reporting and serves as the intermediary for delivering all the documents to public health, the reportable condition knowledge management system, really determining is it reportable into which jurisdictions, and also involved in a lot of direct support activities with public health agencies to help scale their capabilities to receive, utilize the data once they receive it. And so work really closely with electronic health record vendors and healthcare organizations, onboard them and bring them on. So really from start to finish, we're involved in the range of technical implementations for electronic case reporting.
Great. And we may want other colleagues in APHL to help assist when we get to those sections. So I stand corrected. There is another Steve on our committee, but I don't think they're on today. Is that correct, Peter?
Correct. Yeah, we can move on to Aaron.
Aaron.
Yeah, hi, everybody. This is Aaron Holt Coyne. I'm the Chief Public Health Informatics Officer with the Tennessee Department of Health. I am also a co-chair of the Public Health Work Group at HL7 and have been participating in public health-related standards development for probably close to 15 years. And I also served on the last Public Health Data Systems Task Force. The hats that I'll be wearing here obviously is in support of the interest of the Tennessee Department of Health, but also public health at large. Yeah, that's it. Just really glad to be here and looking forward to working with everybody on this. Thanks.
Thanks, Aaron. We can skip down to Mary.
Mary Beth.
Hi, everybody. Mary Beth Carrillo. I'm the Senior Director for Health Informatics at ARA, or the American Immunization Registry Association. Unlike Steve and Ike, I will not answer to Mary, so I'm going to make you say Mary Beth. Really happy to be here. And the hat that I will primarily be wearing is to represent our members. So we work very closely with the immunization information system community, which includes the IIS folks on the ground who are running systems, as well as the vendors and technology partners who support them as well. So this is my first high-tech task force, and I feel honored to be here, and I'm learning a lot from all of you, and happy to represent the immunization community where I can. I'll also just mention that in my background, I've been with ARA for about 10 years, and prior to that, I was working as the director of the state IIS in Oregon for several years. And then the last piece I'll just mention is that within ARA, I oversee several informatics programs, one of which is the Measurement and Improvement Project that we've been doing for about 9 years now, where we work with IIS and measure them against standards-based criteria. So really interested and excited to look at how this all dovetails with HTI2.
I'm going to put you on the spot, Mary Beth, to probably hold that up as an exemplar that we can model for the other F criteria. So,
well, you know, I love talking about it, Brian, so all good.
Dio, you're up. Oh, dial drop. Okay, I guess we're on to Zainab. Is my audio working?
Your audio
yeah, we
is
can hear
working.
You. Zainab, if you're talking, you might be on mute.
Or double mute.
And maybe we can circle back to Zainab and then
So Tom.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. I'm Tom Wilkinson. I'm a coming to you from Detroit from the NATO conference here. I am a family doctor by training and been practicing medicine and informatics for 30 years. And am currently the CMIO, the Chief Medical Information Officer for the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, and where I'm also the Deputy Assistant Secretary for Health Information Systems and Decision Support. So I heard you loud and clear, Beth, that I cannot opine as one of the family of feds, but I can provide context. And among my keen interests are the national security considerations of public health infrastructure.
Thank you. All right, circling back, anyone who's wasn't able to introduce from the committee, maybe we could go through the in the last 2 minutes before we go to public comment, ONC staff.
Yes, happy to. I feel like everyone knows Rachel, so I'll for a second. But my name is Molly Prieto. You may have known me under a previous name, which is Molly Murray. I'm the Deputy Director for the Standards Division at the Office of the National Coordinator. Been at ONC for a few years, but prior to that position, I worked with the US Digital Service and CDC to work on some public health data informatics projects. And so excited to bring hopefully some of those to even further down the road. And so it's really great to work with many of you again and to meet some of you for the first time, and excited to spend my Tuesdays with you all for the next few weeks.
Thanks, Molly. Hey, everyone. I'm Rachel Abbey. I'm with the Office of Policy here at ONC. I know many of you have been around this space for over 10 years or so. So sorry I'm not on camera. I'm getting over COVID. I promise next week I will be on camera. But yeah, so thanks, guys. Really appreciate everyone's willingness to participate in this. It's great. Great to see. I can't believe how far we've come.
And look at that, exactly 12:20. So we planned it perfectly.
All right, great. All right, we would like to open the meeting for public comment. If you are on Zoom and would like to make a comment, please use the hand raise function, which is located on the Zoom toolbar at the bottom of your screen. If you are on the phone only, press *9 to raise your hand. Once called upon, press *6 to mute and unmute your line. So we'll pause for a moment to see if we have any members of the public with raised hands. See if there are any comments coming in through the chat. And while we're waiting, just a reminder to everyone that the next subgroup meeting for this group will be next week on 7:30, July 30th, same time, same place. Just wanted to remind folks that all HITECH meeting materials can be found on healthit.gov. And are publicly available there on our site. Not seeing any raised hands, comments coming in through the chat.
I had a motion to make, Peter, and I'm not sure if this is permissible or not. Given how many topics we need to cover in a couple of the sessions, I was curious if people would be willing to go a half an hour over time, if needed. And if we give people enough advanced notice that we expect the discussion to go deeper than an hour and a half would permit. Is there anybody who would be unavailable for that additional half an hour? And you don't have to answer now, but maybe feedback to the ONC staff if that would be a hardship. I know for East Coasters, we're cutting into your lunch break. Feel free to grab lunch and eat it, you know, off camera if necessary.
Yeah, and Brian, we can follow up with a message as well to the subgroup after this meeting. And you know, folks, you know, otherwise on this call, you just want to share your agreement for extending. That's fine.
Yeah, so I'll motion it. We can have somebody second it and put it to a vote. Anybody second the motion to extend when necessary an extra half an hour for sessions that necessitate it?
Is Aaron Hold all second?
All right.
I think we need, this is Steve. I think we need to give people an opportunity to look at their calendars.
All right.
Before there's a vote. I appreciate your interest in having some urgency, but I think people do need a moment to review schedules.
All right. Well, please try to block out an additional half an hour. Let us know if there's any tremendous hardship. As long as we can keep some semblance of a quorum.
So again, I think maybe just to amend my comment frequently, I think you might be able to take a position where we would like to schedule and plan to extend meetings by a half hour with the holdout. If somebody has an issue that they cannot make and need to go back to the current schedule, they can raise that as an issue. Is that a happy compromise?
Yeah, and I will make every effort for us to finish on time at 11 or 12:30 Eastern when possible. But I know that some of the discussions are going to get very weedy and wonky. Well, so
for the purposes of this being a public meeting, I think if we're looking at making the change, we need to make the change for a longer meeting, but then end early if we can end early.
Yeah, but we may need to still take a break for public comment in the original proposed time. Rather than ending early and not giving people who are expecting to do public comment after we've ended.
Absolutely. I was not at all suggesting removing a public comment period. I was thinking if we shifted the time period to the longer period so that the public were aware that the meeting would be running longer, easier to give time back than to run late and have the public have a conflict.
And Brian, just a question for clarification. Are you proposing this for specifically the 7:30 meeting or for all meetings moving forward?
And Hans has got his hand up. I don't know if that's in a vote or as a question, but I think there are some that we can predictably know that they're going to definitely go over. But I think it could be useful to have it available for any that are necessary, and just have people, you know, block it out if possible. I've got it blocked out because of our debrief time period already. But I'm open to hear other people's thoughts on that.
I think the 7:30 one is probably the one we could easily do in 90 minutes, and the others would be more likely to need 2 hours. But that's just my gut sense. Sorry, Hans.
That's okay. I'm This was not a hand to vote since we're still in discussion and the question has not been called yet. But the as part of the approach, that because it's going to get difficult sometimes, if not more times, that then issues or topics that are scheduled and that at the beginning of the meeting that there could be a poll to understand, are there certain topics that should be done before the end of the regular hour, if you will, so that those that really wanted to contribute to that can do that, and those that can stay longer can work on other topics at that point in time. So that's always a challenge, but just to help manage it, because it is going to get tricky with conflicting meetings that also have also been scheduled for a while.
Okay.
And I do want to be cognizant of time now, because it is 12:27, so we got 3 minutes until we wrap up.
Any further public comment come in since?
Not seeing any public comments at this time. All right, so I think we can turn it back to you, Bryant, for the next steps and closing remarks.
All right. Well, stand by for homework assignments and be sure and test your ability to log in to the Google Sheet and work with the ONC and Accel staff to fix any problems you have. We're oftentimes doing live updates to the Google Sheet as we're having discussions. So you may want to have more than one screen available for the next session. I cannot tell you how excited I am to be making this progress. I think this is an accumulation of work that we've all been moving towards in our various capacities, and seeing this level of capability put forth really puts us in a great spot in public health. Expectation management, I think we're not all going to get everything we want. We'll need to compromise. We'll need to come to a consensus. But incrementally, everything we do during this task force will get us one step closer to our goal and our view of advancing our public health capabilities. So really appreciate everybody's time and attention on this. All right, I think we're at time.
Thanks so much, everyone. See you next week.